Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, email techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Follow TA_weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. This is Tech Access Weekly, episode 131 for March 14th, 2012. It's Wednesday, and I'm Rodney.
And I'm Erin.
And it's a cult of pie. Hot diggity dad dum diggity.
Yes, today is Pi Day.
And we're actually getting this on a Wednesday.
Woohoo! Happy Pi Day, everyone. I really want pie. Incidentally, the day celebrates 3.14159, whatever the pi is, since it's March 14th.
Yeah, and if we would have made this by 159, we could have, 159 p.m., we could have
really had Pi Day.
Yeah. But, or I guess we could wait until, well, no, we would have had to done it at 1:59 a.m.
We would have had to done it this morning, so that doesn't work.
Well, I was still awake, so really know that it really mattered.
Yeah.
Anyway, big news, the Book Hoarders Anonymous podcast that you can follow on Twitter at
Book Hoarders,
and you can visit the website bhapodcast.com. It's now in iTunes.
And we have had some wonderful commentary on the first episode, and we really appreciate that. I have answered a lot of the emails that have come through, actually all of them that have come through so far. So please feel free to follow us on Twitter. Shannon Curry and myself. You can follow our personal Twitter accounts and the podcast account. Podcast Twitter account is
Book Hoarders.
Book Hoarders. All one word.
Yes. And Shannon's is Bardsong, B-A-R-D-S-O-N-G, not to be confused with the book service.
No. And mine is Erin Edgar. Wow, I'm so original.
I tell you.
So, thanks to Rodney, we've got this up on iTunes now, and it's available to a whole lot more people. And you can also subscribe to it through Downcast.
Yes. I hear it's, like, pretty good and, like, okay and, like...
Kind of like that.
Interesting.
Shannon got a comment that said, we rambled dizzily along during our first episode. Dizzily. Which is true. She also is a little bit upset because that's the way she usually talks. And we both also got a comment that said that we both said like, little too, like much. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So,
we'll... Like us and apparently and adverbs.
Yes. So we shall try to limit our adverb use and our like use as much as possible in the future.
But I bet it's not likely.
Probably not. Ha ha. Just to refresh everyone's memory, the homework this time is to read The Hunger Games, the first book in this trilogy by Suzanne Collins, because the first episode, the first week in March, we'll be recording episode two.
April.
We'll be recording episode two after I have seen The Hunger Games movie, which is on April 31st. That's why I mean,
March 31st.
Oi.
Faye.
Getting my dates confused. So I'm going on March 31st. We'll record the first week in April.
Mama, I think it's still March 14th.
Yes. Yes, it is still March 14th.
And now that we have plugged the ever-living crapola out of Book Hoarders Anonymous, the podcast that you can find on iTunes and Downcast.
Woohoo!
We'll move along to listener mail here on
Tech Access Weekly.
Exactly.
We have gotten several comments on our last episode, which is fantastic. Kate, I don't know if she's emailed before, but she has emailed us and said that we were talking last week about the facial recognition and the fact that the camera will now notify you on the iPhone and iPad when your face is in the center of the screen. And she's a little irritated by that because she not only wants to take pictures of faces, she wants to take pictures of things. So she would like to know, for instance, when an object is itself in the center of the field of view. So she would like the sort of recognition to encompass not only faces, but objects. And I kind of see where she's coming from with that. I wonder if there's an app that does that.
I know there are, there is an app. I can't remember whether it's something that is like an accessibility app or not, but there's one that I believe when you actually get the object in the middle, it will actually beep and sort of give you when things are moving outside of the lines, but I cannot remember what that is. I have about 10 or 12 apps for picture taking on my phone, so I'll have to see if I can find that.
Yeah, and if anyone can recommend a good app that does that, that would be fantastic, and we can certainly let her know about that.
Yeah,
and
because
I'd like it too myself.
Well, I mean, if you're using something like Digitize or one of these things, like the new... What is it? The new look tail recognizer. You'd kind of like to be able to center it up. If you're doing a can of corn, you would like to actually have the can of corn in the picture, you know, as opposed to trying to wedge it in between something to hold it in place so that you can get the camera in the right place. Especially, it doesn't help either that the camera is on the edge of the phone instead of in the back, middle of the back.
Yeah.
That is an annoyance.
That doesn't help. I wish it was in the middle myself. We also got, speaking of Apple and the iPad, an email from Zivon Krischer. I'm really not sure how to pronounce your name, so I'm sorry if I totally messed it up.
It's probably better than my attempt.
Well, anyway, so we got an email from him, and he says that he is really looking forward to the new iPad. He ordered one. He has an iPad 2. He ordered a new iPad. He is a Zoom text user and a low vision user, and he thinks the display will be better for his eyes. He also is really excited about the camera, and he hopes it'll be usable for magnification, a little bit better than the previous camera. And he's very excited because he's going to give his iPad 2 to his mother. Because she's wanted an iPad and can't afford to get one, I guess.
Oh,
and so
that's
he's giving
good.
It to his mother, which is fantastic.
Yeah, apparently Shannon Curry is trying to get me to give her the iPad that I ordered.
Yes, yes, I have seen that on Twitter.
Yes.
I don't think she's going to be very successful, though.
No, she'd have to sweeten the pie a lot in order to do that.
Now, watch out what you asked for.
Hey, I'm just saying, I can be bought. But probably
we could take that in a variety of directions that I just really don't want to go into right now.
Yeah. But the iPad 3 or third generation or HD that they didn't call it, it is going to have a camera that is the same or slightly better than the iPhone 4, not as good as the 4S. So it should be good for pictures and optical recognition. So that should be a good thing. It's just, how are you going to feel holding it up in the air taking a picture? I saw Mike Greenberg on ESPN the other morning. He was somewhere and he was taking a picture with his iPad, and it just looked weird that he was holding it up. But then at the same time, I remember the episode of the Andy Griffith Show where the filmmaker comes in and he's like trying to figure out the shots that he wants to take of Mayberry. And he's holding his hands up at about the same width as what an iPad is to sort of frame the shot that he's looking at. So maybe it's not quite as crazy as we think.
Maybe not.
But ours is currently in Middleton, Pennsylvania.
Woo! And just as you can go to apple.com to order an iPad, you can also go to aisquared.com to find out about the new version of Zoom Text. We have a listener who wants to know what the new features in version 10 are. And in order to find out, you can go there and look it up.
One of the big things is the fact that you can use a digital you can use a webcam to actually put things on your computer screen using Zoom Text. So it can actually be sort of a CCTV, if you will, a poor man's CCTV, I guess, because you would have to hold it. I still haven't tried that. I still keep thinking I'm going to do
that.
I still haven't tried that. I did it with the iLoView, and it worked pretty good, but you really couldn't move it too much, and the lighting had to be right
for that, like a little tripod thing.
Yeah, possibly. I've got one for the iPhone, which works pretty good, but not something for a webcam. Yeah, you can head over to AI Squared for that. Speaking of the iPad 2, 3, or iPad third generation, or the new iPad,
or whatever they want to call it.
Yeah, the confusing thing that everybody's griping about still. That has actually been delayed by 2 to 3 weeks. It was March 19th, which was like delaying it over the weekend, but now it is actually 2 to 3 weeks and possibly longer if you order at this point.
Mm-hmm.
All distribution stores will open at 8 a.m. on Friday morning the 16th in order to do sales here in the U.S.
Oh, God. Madhouse.
Pretty much.
Madhouse.
FedEx keeps saying that our iPad will be delivered on Friday before 3 p.m.
We have one or two more pieces of listener mail to go through from the last episode.
I'll stop rambling.
The question was, how does Chrome work with JAWS now? Because it's on version 17 point whatever. We had two listeners, Marvin Hunken and Chris Brunenberg, who have both emailed in and said that it works pretty well with version 15 and above. Chris Brunenberg did say that he has trouble reading combo boxes with Chrome, finding your current selection in a combo box. But if you use the say current line command with JAWS, you can get around that little obstacle. So apparently they're both having pretty good success using Chrome with JAWS.
Yeah, and if anybody has any tips on how to do combo boxes in Chrome, if you found a little trick or something, definitely pass that along.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now we'll go into sort of a mix mash of our typical things. We have security and Microsoft news. Microsoft just had Patch Tuesday, which means, hey, more wonderful patches for you to download. Six, in fact. One is actually involving a very bad exploit for all flavors of Windows, even Windows 8, the consumer preview, which I'm running in a virtual box. Anyway, remote desktop protocol has an issue where companies usually turn this on to self-administer and maintain servers, computers, that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, there is an exploit that is a self-replicating code exploit that does not require any human intervention, and it will actually execute code on your system, call out to other servers, do a whole bunch of little nasty things. Well, Microsoft got a fix in for that, so you definitely want to upgrade because this affects anyone. Granted, hackers are most likely going to go after more prominent businesses, and there may also be an additional fix coming next month related to this to sort of bolster the security there.
Right. And a lot of people and developers thought this was important. Mozilla thought it was so important to wait for their next release that they delayed their release of the current version of Firefox until Patch 11. Tuesday came out.
Which was today that they actually released version 11 of Firefox. If you open your Firefox browser, it should automatically update, or you will have to go to the help menu and go down to the About. And then that will allow you to update it. A couple of things that it is actually having is it will actually import. See, I'm saying actually a lot. That's not good.
That's an adverb.
Yeah, that's not good. I have to put money in the adverb jar. There is an option now to import bookmarks and settings from Chrome, which is the Google browser. You'll be able to sync add-ons across computers. Not quite sure how that exactly works. Haven't tried that yet.
Comparing devices, too.
Yeah, and there is also a CSS style editor for developers so that you can actually... Luckily, it's only a dime per adverb.
Luckily.
Yeah, because if it was a dollar, I'd be in the poorhouse.
No, luckily is another adverb.
Fudge! Wish I had some fudge.
I'd rather have pie.
How about chocolate peanut butter pie?
Ooh.
They were talking about that on Tech News today before we started this. Also, there is integration with the Google DNS protocol called Speedy, S-P-D-Y, that will help you to load pages faster if you enable it. I believe Firefox actually has it. Anyway, I'll just ignore it. Firefox has this service disabled, but you can enable it if you go under your preferences.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of another developer who is using Microsoft Windows and who has a product using Windows, OnLive is a gaming platform that runs a version of Windows 7.
Yeah, it's a version of Windows 7 that you can run on your iOS device. This is actually an emulation that Microsoft is now saying, well, OnLive is saying that it's licensed, but it's really not. It's not technically, because the license agreement, which is the SPLA, does not support delivery of Windows 7 as a hosted client. Or it does not allow the ability to access Microsoft Office as a service, which is what OnLive is claiming. When you actually download the free app, you can get access to Windows 7 and Microsoft Office.
Right.
So they are having a few little disputes there, and Microsoft seems to be willing to try and help get OnLive.
Right. They licensed. Want money, essentially, is what they want. They want OnLive to pay them some money, and then they will quite willingly, it seems, let them use the software, but you know, they want to cut. And apparently they've got some other companies doing the same thing, you know, paying them a little bit, and then they'll grant them licenses to use it.
Yeah, and it kind of seems like if they were not allowing the use of Microsoft Office, that this might actually be okay the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not completely clear, because they're sort of keeping this under wraps as far as how much they discuss. Speaking of virtual versions of Windows, Oracle has released a new version of VirtualBox. VirtualBox 4.1.10. Now has better support for Windows 8, which they really haven't explained what that is, and lots of various fixes for Linux distributions if you are running that on your system. It's a free version of a piece of software that actually acts like Parallels and VMware Fusion.
So woohoo!
You may want to check that out. You can go and download the update for your VirtualBox installation by going to the Help menu. I swear I'm running Windows 8 right now, and I don't like it.
He doesn't like it.
It doesn't make any sense. Ew. It's hard to find what you're looking for if you're so used to working in the typical Windows environment with a start menu. And
put it this way, people. If you thought Windows 7 was different and weird and you couldn't understand Windows 7, you might want to start kind of trying to understand it, because Windows 8 is even worse.
One thing that I really didn't think about that was pointed out in another podcast was that the start menu, which is the tile view, some of the tiles are rectangles, which mm-hmm. take up a whole slot, and some are little squares where two things can sit side by side. So navigating with a screen reader might be a little challenging if you're using just arrow keys. So that is something that will have to be expounded upon.
Speaking of Windows 8, there are rumors that Freedom Scientific is not set to release JAWS 14 for a while, and Windows 8 support will not come until JAWS 14 comes out. But there are rumors floating around that Freedom Scientific will be starting to demonstrate some of the Windows 8 support features in JAWS 14 fairly soon. Now, I have no idea what that means, but I'm just saying that they are aware of the problems and are working for a fix. It may not come as soon as we would like, of course, but it will probably come about the time I decide to upgrade from JAWS 12 on this computer. So, you know.
Yeah, and it has also been mentioned that Jonathan Mosen, who does the FS cast for Freedom Scientific, is planning to do a demonstration of Windows 8 and JAWS 14 on the FS cast. So you may want to check that out.
Like we said, soon.
Yes, in the next 1 to 2 months.
Yeah, the rumor mill has it. I have not confirmed it with Jonathan or with Freedom Scientific, but the rumor mill says.
Yes.
So anyway, we need a ding.
Well, hackers are at it again. And this time they are using URL shorteners, and of course, they're picking on Dropbox.
Absolutely. Dropbox does have its own URL shortener. It has, you know, a public folder where people can store things, and then it can go and download them. Spammers are using this URL shortener to direct you to images, not the actual file that you want, but an image file, which then directs you to websites selling you know, bogus pharmaceutical products.
Yes. So it's a loophole that Dropbox has not said that anything about, and there is no word as to whether they are addressing the issue. No. So you might just want to be a little bit careful if you are doing Dropbox URL clicking.
Yeah. If you are using, make sure that you expand your URL. Oftentimes you can do that in a tweet quite easily. By, you know, your API client will have a feature to expand the URL so you can see what it is. If you're not in a tweet, what are some ways that you can expand a URL without hovering over it? Because I know you can do that with TECO links. You can hover over them and they will expand, but some of us can't use the mouse pointer to hover like that.
I'm not sure because for me, I would just sort of hover and then sort of look in the bottom corner of the status bar, because that should tell you on your browser what that link is going to be. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how you could actually do that. Now, everyone criticizes Twitter because of the TECO shortener that they use. And one thing that they do is if they find that a link is spam, they will actually kill that link
right.
that is shortened. So that's kind of a safety security feature that they really don't publicize that much. They will actually try to interrogate links that people are sending out. Yeah. I know occasionally I have clicked on a few things and it says, I'm sorry, but that link is no longer there. And
yes,
like,
I've seen
what
that
was
too.
This?
Yeah. So anyway, just to keep aware of the weird Dropbox issues going on.
Yeah, and if anybody has tips on how to expand things when you're not in a client that has that, be a good tip.
I would really love to know because that's something I've been wanting to do anyway, just, you know, for my own self, security issues aside.
I think if you're in doubt, don't click it.
Yeah, basically if you're in doubt, don't click it.
If you're curious,
then,
you might tweet the person back and say,
what is this thing?
Is this from you, really?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, hackers
are
doing a little bit more, and this time it doesn't even care who you are because they're hacking the Vatican.
Oh, boy. Yeah, they're hacking the big boys over at Vatican City.
Wonder if it hair-lipped the Pope.
They've hacked into one of the Vatican radio servers, which is apparently an old one. 30% of the data is out of date and really of no use. They've also hacked into the Vatican IP address itself, into the Vatican main servers. Vatican's being very cagey about what, if anything, has been
compromised.
Done or compromised or stolen or whatever. But hackers have stated that they did this because they want to protest the fact that Catholic ministers have molested children, and they also believe that Vatican Radio's transmissions are against the law. That's all I know. That's all the article says. We don't have any further information on that.
Yeah, they're being a little quiet about what was actually done and what the protest was.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
More hacking!
The website, Digital Playground, that hosts adult entertainment was actually hacked, and the bad part is that the hackers were able to get, in clear text form, 73,000 email addresses, usernames, and passwords.
Ooh.
And some 47 credit card numbers, along with the CVV, the CCV number.
Ooh.
I always screw that up. I even do that at work, and I deal with ATM
You deal
cards.
With that all day long.
CCV numbers and expiration dates. So
Madness.
The hackers could actually completely impersonate you if you were a member of Digital Playground who had such people as Jesse, Jane, and such. I went to the website just to see if it was still up or they had a notice or anything like that. Interesting pictures.
We'll leave that there, shall we?
Moving right along,
we need another ding.
Safari for Apple and other devices has been updated to version 5.1.4. You will probably get a wonderful update in your iTunes.
Yeah, the first really major update since Snow Leopard, at least for security reasons. And they have updated. They are trying to patch, 83 vulnerabilities
and trying to boost JavaScript performance on OS X Lion.
Mm-hmm.
72 of the 83 issues are considered critical.
Yeah. So Apple's trying to stay ahead of the virus people, but the virus people seem to be catching up.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people still, to this day, mm-hmm. are still saying that, well, I'm on a Mac, I'm completely safe. I don't have to worry about it. Well, that was true probably about 2007, 2008. I mean, granted, you really technically were not safe. You were just as vulnerable, but
you just, there was such a small market of people who were on the Macs that developers of such nasties didn't think it was really worth it to come after them. But now that Macs and iOS devices are getting more used,
well, that and
it's becoming a problem.
Windows XP and Windows 7 is a heck of a lot more safe than it used to be.
That's true.
I mean, they continuously are patching different issues. So if you know anybody with a Mac, they may want to be a little bit careful.
Careful, exactly.
Yeah.
iOS 5.1
has some unannounced security and management features, according to Cult of Mac. They have found that there is mobile device management, or MDM, along with Apple's new Apple Configurator tool, which I hadn't really heard of this, but the Configurator tool is used for businesses to try and maintain different settings and make it good across an enterprise, I guess. I will include a link in the show notes describing what Apple Configurator is. The biggest things that these security changes are doing is trying to filter out profanity when using Siri and to prevent Siri from actually being used when your screen on your iOS device is locked.
Ah.
So it's kind of one of those things where there's kind of a hack that you can do that will get you around the home screen in order to look at people's address books and things. So
right.
I guess
they're trying to patch that
loophole for Siri to be able to access that kind of stuff.
Hmm. Do we need a ding yet?
Yeah, why not? We can always use a ding. Everybody seems to love the dings.
Yes. Rumor mill is active again.
The iPad 3rd generation, according to Apple.
No, the new iPad.
That is the new iPad.
Yeah, but it's not called iPad 3rd generation. It's called the new iPad.
Well, they say the third... They call it the new iPad, but then in parentheses, 3rd generation.
Oh, that's too complicated.
Yeah, have we proven the point that it's confusing?
Anyway.
Or are we beating a dead horse? Not that we really want to kill a horse to beat it or anything. Anyway, it has been found that Best Buy has in their catalog potential listings for Sprint iPads. Because last week when they had the announcement, there were no mentions to Sprint getting an iPad. So there are a lot of different screenshots going around showing that there are various flavors of Sprint iPads. So if you are on Sprint and you're holding out for an iPad, you may get one sooner than later.
Sooner than you think.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
But there is nothing mentioned about that.
No. Just a rumor at this point.
Yes. In our show notes, there is a wonderful descriptive article on iPhoto for iOS 5.1. Tries to compare and give you the ideas of how it differs from the Adobe suite that just recently came out for iOS devices. Some of the changes that it explains is how easy it is to change colors, apply effects, do a little photo editing type of things.
Trimming and cropping.
Yeah, trimming, cropping, changing red eye and stuff like that on the fly. The fact that it has various tool tips on the iPad is useful because a lot of the things you don't know what in the heck they are, but there is a setting.
Right.
It is also available for iPhone 4, 4S, iPad 2, and greater, and you have to have iOS 5.1, so iPod Touch users are kind of out of luck. Yeah, but it is a good article that kind of gives you an idea of how to use the photo editor.
Yeah, and apparently it gives Adobe Photoshop a run for its money, so Those of you photo experts might want to give that a look-see.
Yeah, and it is half the cost.
Yes.
I believe the Adobe product is $9.99 and iPhoto is $4.99. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. Another update. iTunes 10.6 will allow for you to sync music that is higher. 192K or 256K.
Bit yes. Used to be you could only sync music that was 128K or lower between your mobile device and your computer. Now you can sync music at higher bit rates.
Yeah. And when we say sync, we mean to iCloud. You will actually be able to sync to that. You've always been able to sync different bit rates to your mobile devices.
Right.
But this will actually allow you to convert tracks to 192 or 256. So audiophiles out there will be a little bit happier.
A little bit.
A little bit. We keep ours at around 192K.
Yeah.
Just because of size constraints. And you really can't tell that much of a difference unless you have the golden ears.
Yeah. Well, some people may or may not, depending on how useful you found this app, be a little bit upset that iWork is going to bite the dust on July 31st.
Yeah. And I didn't even know this existed.
Well, I had sort of heard about it.
But we don't really have a Mac, so we wouldn't really know anything about it. But it is their cloud service that allows for the syncing and collaboration of documents.
Kind of like Google Docs.
Yeah, and it's kind of been replaced by iCloud.
Yeah, and iCloud and a couple other Mac apps. Yeah. So,
and it actually never came out of beta.
No, it was still in beta. Kind of like Google Docs was in beta for a long time. Actually, is that still in beta?
I don't know. It's hard to know because Gmail was beta for like 5 years.
Yeah. So anyway, be sure to back up your iWork documents because as of July 31st, it's going to go bye-bye.
Bye. Apple, in other news, has been sued over Siri.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't do
it. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do, and the ads are fiction. Some guy in New York is really upset with his iPhone 4S. He got it because it had Siri. And he thought that Siri's responses should be snappy and wonderful and crisp and perfect. Because, he claims, the commercials demonstrate that Siri works flawlessly. Well, he gets the phone and he has a lot of trouble with poor Siri. He can't get her to schedule appointments or reminders for him. He has trouble getting her to understand anything, he says. And so because of this, this proves that the commercials are fiction and that Siri does not work. And he thinks this was false advertising and he wants to sue Apple. Now, I will grant you that Apple probably smooths out wrinkles in the commercials.
Really?
You know, obviously.
Like fast food commercials where they use plastic food to make that burger look really good?
Exactly. But so many other companies do the same thing, just like you pointed out, the fast food and everything. And voice recognition is not a proven, well, I don't know if proven science is the right word, but it's not perfect. It has not been perfected yet. And Apple does not make any claims whatsoever that Siri is going to operate perfectly every time.
Well, they do. They do consider Siri to be sort of beta.
Yeah, and it's also a beta product.
That's why it did not come at this point to the iPad third generation slash new.
Right.
I think it could be different things. I believe, wasn't he in New York?
Yes.
And New York is notorious for bad service as far as mobile devices.
That's true.
Accents could get into the way, you know. I mean, if you tried to listen to the Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, talk to, what was that phone, that alarm clock? Oh, Moshi.
The Moshi clock. Moshi. Yeah, that's right.
He never could get that dadburn thing to set because of his accent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that kind of thing could impact it. I did hear on the Sarah Talk Triple Click Home, a couple of them saying that they've used Siri and it sounded okay and they enjoyed it and they were using it a lot for typing and getting directions and different things and they really hadn't had a problem. I guess it's kind of your area may cause your mileage to vary.
Right. And the way you talk and the clarity of your voice. Apple has been quick to point out that recently it introduced Japanese support for Siri and there have been problems with people who claim that Siri does not understand complicated Japanese syntax and that it only understands basic words and phrases. So Apple, you know, Nuance and Apple may need to do some work on that. But, you know, it seems like there are so many variables involved that it's hard to hold Apple responsible for all this guy's problems.
But it can be considered misleading and deceptive if you buy a product and it just doesn't quite work.
That's true.
Maybe he just needs little piece of apple pie instead of Siri.
Maybe so.
The fun people over at Walmart are trying to bring DVDs to digital for the common people.
Yeah, apparently if you have a DVD of a certain movie, you can turn it into Walmart and get $2 back? I didn't quite understand this, to be frank with you.
Well, they... Don't call me Shirley. Frank?
Frank?
I don't know. What? Anyway, Walmart owns a service called Vudu, which has a service that you'll hear advertised on movie rentals and purchases for like Blu-ray called Ultraviolet. So if you go out and you buy, say, the Star Trek movie or something, you might get a digital copy on there that's provided by Ultraviolet, which is like a locker system. So what Walmart is going to do is they're going to say, you bring in your DVD, pay us either $2 for a standard definition or $5 for a high def version of the movie, and we will give you access to it on the Ultraviolet system.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, if you got somebody out there that has no clue what Vudu is or Ultraviolet, they hear the buzzword, but they don't know how to access it, kind of like your folks.
Yeah.
If you were to say, you know, I mean, granted, your dad wouldn't be able to go because he'd have to shower afterwards.
go to Walmart, yeah.
Yeah, but you'd be able to take this movie that you've had for 10 years or whatever. They go in, hand it to the guy. The guy looks at it, says, okay, scans a little barcode on it and says, okay, you got access to it. It's not like they're doing any conversion or anything like that. If they have the movie on file, then they just add it to your queue and you've got it. A lot of people are saying that it's a little irritating because they're still trying to get money for movies you already own.
Right.
You know, but I guess they are providing a service for you.
I guess.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things. Digital formats coming out. It's just like when Blu-ray came out or...
HD DVD.
Yeah, the HD DVD. If you wanted it in that format, you had to purchase it that way. So now it's kind of coming to digital formats that way.
It's cheaper than purchasing the DVD.
Yeah, but you already purchased it for $15 probably at the store, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're going to have to purchase it again.
Yeah, it's. I doubt it'll catch on. But
probably hey, not.
Walmart has a large audience of people that go there. So maybe they'll look at, you know, I want to try this here thing. So,
Twitter has bought Posterous.
Which is sort of a microblogging aggregator.
It seems like it can take your posts from Facebook, Twitter, and other sites and kind of like aggregate them into your own personal page.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool service. I've used it before where you can actually go in and say, okay, here's an email account. If I send information from this email account to a Posterous account, it knows where to distribute it. So you'll have a Facebook account at Posterous.com. And if you send email to that, it'll automatically post it to your Facebook account. Later on, they kind of added the functionality of it being kind of like Tumblr, where you would actually have a page of all of your posts in one place.
Right.
So that's kind of where it came into the microblogging a little bit. When it first started, it was a microblogger because it would aggregate things out to Twitter and Facebook, do your short little post and everything, but it's kind of matured over the last couple of years. Right now, Twitter has not said anything about changing the product or whether they will try to integrate it into Twitter or anything. It's pretty much going to stay as is.
For the moment, and the teams do seem to be excited about working together. They seem to have plans. They're just not sharing them with us right now.
Yeah. So if you're on multiple networks like Twitter and Facebook and different things, you might want to check it out because you can configure it to be pretty flexible.
Yeah.
You can say, hey, if I send it to this, send it to these three accounts.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. Facebook, in more social news, is introducing interest lists.
Where does this kind of taking a page from Twitter's book, in a sense. With Twitter, you can compile lists of followers and friends based on things you might be interested in or topics. For example, I have a list of friends. I have a list of technology people that I follow. I have a list of people in North Carolina that I follow. I have a list of accessibility people that I follow. And you know, the list goes on.
Or companies, or coupon sites.
I mean, you know, you can make lists about whatever you want based on what people tweet about. Well, Facebook has a similar thing. It is going to start having interest lists that you can create. So you can go to pages or people's profiles or something. You know, if people post on a certain topic that interests you, or if you're interested in a certain celebrity, you can add these together as lists, and then the list will be displayed in your news feed on your wall.
So it's kind of like an RSS feed of everything that you specifically want to see.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can predefine it as to people, brands, information, topics, that kind of thing. So,
Maybe.
You figured it was probably coming.
Oh, yeah, I knew it was coming at some point. I'm just not that excited because I hardly ever use Facebook.
I mean, if you have the mobile app for iOS, it has different sections in there. You know, like you have, okay, you created a group for high school friends. You created a group for neighborhood people.
Right.
You created something for family, you know, so... it's kind of the same thing, just kind of expanding.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Facebook's doing like Apple and stealing an idea.
Yeah, of course.
Got a reminder of the
ding. A 12-year-old girl in Minnesota, or rather her parents, are suing a school district because they got access to her Facebook profile in which she, got mad at teachers at school.
Yeah, the Minnewaski School District of Minnesota.
Yes. Is being sued because her parents' attorneys, say that her First and Fourth Amendment rights have been violated because they basically looked on her Facebook profile and saw that she was mad at this teacher or hall monitor or something.
Yeah,
and
she said that the hall monitor was mean.
Yeah, she said the hall monitor was mean. And she was punished at school, and she believes that these punishments were given her based on the content in her Facebook profile, or on her Facebook wall, things that she posted. She apparently was interrogated by a sheriff's officer and the school principal or somebody. And
I think it was a guidance counselor sort of coerced her into giving up her password.
Yeah, giving up her Facebook password so they could go in and look at her account and do whatever it is they do. One hitch with this, in order to create a Facebook account, you have to be 13. Apparently, this was not something her parents created for her. The waters are a little murky here, though, because Facebook doesn't automatically, when you create an account, say, we want a copy of your birth certificate or your driver's, or your, not driver's license, but your birth certificate or something to say that you're 13 or over. What ends up happening is you create a Facebook account. You can say you're 13 or not. You could even probably manufacture a birthday. But when the account status is called into question, parents are required to basically prove that their children are 13 or over. But that only happens if, for some reason, there's a question about the account.
Yeah, and they also allow parents to create Facebook accounts for babies.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre.
That's a little bizarre, because when does it come into being a conflict?
Yeah.
I guess what Facebook is trying to say is that, well, for one thing, she should have never had an account. If they find out that accounts are by someone that is underage, they'll try and get information to the parent.
Right.
You know, so that the parent can administer and maintain mm-hmm. the account for the minor, I guess they would consider.
And I guess, I mean, there is a question here about whether she can prevail. Hopefully this settles, because, you know, whether her parents can prevail or not, because, she's got this account on Facebook. She's under Facebook age. So does that mean that she is or is not protected? You know?
Yeah, because you're
can
still...
Can she fall under Facebook's, you know, well, protections, for lack of a better word?
Well, and didn't the court or something say that, well, yeah, she's a minor, she's not supposed to be on there, but she still has civil liberties?
Well, her parents' attorneys are claiming she has civil liberties, and I agree. I just wonder. I mean, I hope this comes to a settlement, like the case in Philadelphia did. They had a monetary settlement out of it. This just seems like the school district acted inappropriately, and she also acted inappropriately by setting up a Facebook account when she's underage. And there's always more to a story than we know about. So obviously, you know, we have to kind of leave it here at this point. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Poor actions on both sides. And, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the requirements are for age and things. I know that a while back, God, it's been 2 or 3 years, if you tried to sign up for a Gmail account and you put like 12 or 13 years of age or something like that, it would actually say, we need the email address of your parent.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that going around. It's probably been 4 years since then.
Yeah.
So Facebook, I don't know what they do.
Facebook doesn't do that. That would really make a lot of sense, actually. They actually want like notarized statements from the parents saying that this child is indeed over age 13. It would be really simple if, you know, they just emailed the parents, you know, and got the email address. I guess maybe they're thinking the parents like in collusion with the child or something. I don't know.
I mean, it's a slippery slope. You could create a Facebook for kids, but then you also have to validate that every person that signs up is not an adult.
Exactly.
You know.
And, you know, she's going to have to prove that she was punished based on what people saw on her Facebook page. That's also another hurdle. Why exactly they wanted the passwords is not really clear.
Well, I guess it's because the hall monitor probably complained that she was saying bad things about her on Facebook, and because she had her security, they couldn't access it.
I guess.
And so,
gee, why are you? I mean, she said she was mean. So what?
Well, it's kind of like employers try to search people's Facebook and social media accounts.
But it just seems like somebody's taking this entirely too personal. Personally, meaning the hall monitor.
I mean, hey, some of those school administrators probably have the mentality of a 12-year-old.
That's quite possible. Moving right along.
Bank of America makes it really easy for a man to embezzle money from the city of Seattle.
They're also acting like a 12-year-old. They let this guy create accounts, one of which was called the City of C, and they let him deposit.
That's close.
Yeah, C-S-E-A. And they let him deposit, like, well, how much was this?
Over 2 years, he did $1.1 million. And he would disperse it between this City of C and his personal account. And Bank of America did not ask anything about it when he was bringing in checks and money orders for the City of Seattle.
These checks were coming from one of the utility companies that services Seattle.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
Nuts. So, you know, no word yet on any, criminal actions, although I'm sure he'll be charged with embezzlement at some point. Wasn't he employed by these people?
Yes. Yeah, he was actually...
The Northwestern Utility Company or whatever it was.
Yeah, the Public Utilities Commission there in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So he had access to the information, but why...
Bank of America did not catch this.
He had to have somebody that knew that.
He had to. Had to have. Another sort of criminal story. We don't need a ding for this one because it's kind of just
simple.
A court of appeals has stated that courts do not need, police do not need a warrant when searching a cell phone. Now, they maintain that the search has to be limited to certain things. For example, if you want to find names and addresses, things that are clearly visible on a cell phone, you know, sort of at a glance. This is sort of piggybacking off of a general rule, something that's already been decided in case law that says that if the police are looking for some information, for example, in an address book or a calendar that you may have on yourself, paper address book and calendar, they can search those. And this is stating the same thing as an iPhone. The Court of Appeals judge likened this to a diary. So if you had a diary, you know, or a day planner or something, They could search that. And so they can also search the same things on your iPhone. This could get sticky if police want to search for more, for different things, you know, on the fly. But if police are in a sort of tense situation and they want, you know, certain pertinent information at a glance, but the situation is kind of tense, they don't want to have to take the time, at least I wouldn't think, to thumb through a phone and look for something that might be buried in it. They'd want to have a warrant first. And they wouldn't have time if the situation were tense enough.
Well, if you're in a criminal situation and you're trying to get a resolution, they probably would take the phone and try to look through it. You know, it depends on the officer.
Well, it depends on the officer and it depends on the circumstances. It's if they're trying to arrest somebody, they're not going to try and page through the phone while they're arresting this person.
Well, if it's in the same area as people being able to videotape police officers doing their job, you know, that is still being debated as to whether that's legal or not legal. I think President Obama said that it was a legal act that you should be able to. And a lot of officers get very
upset
and intense because people are videotaping.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it from a practical standpoint. What would an officer have time to do between the time he sees the criminal activity and the time that if he arrests the person for it? He wouldn't have time to go paging through, you know, all the apps on the phone to find information that's buried in it.
Well, and this Richard Posner, the judge that made this decision, he really didn't make it clear as to what kind of circumstances would constitute going through the data. So
scary enough.
That's another problem.
I know him from other court opinions, and he has that tendency not to be tremendously clear.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Either that or it's a relation of his who has the same name.
It's probably the same guy.
But
I think he's in Philadelphia somewhere.
Yeah.
PA.
PA, yes.
And now, on to accessibility news. Microsoft is demonstrating some vocal translation.
Yeah, this really isn't accessibility, but it's sort of cool ability, so I put it in this section. It's a vocal translator, kind of like Google Translate, but different. What you do is you essentially take this app, I guess it runs with Microsoft Windows, put it on a computer, and you train it to recognize your voice, and there's a special way to do it. Not just so it recognizes what you say, but so that it recognizes the way you pronounce all your phonemes. You know, all the different things that make up speech.
Sort of your accent.
Your accent. And the timbre of your voice. You know, like it would try, it wants your deepness of your voice. And it wants the sort of contralto of my voice. So that when you ask it to translate something into another language, it uses your voice timbre and pitch, as well as the way you pronounce your sounds, to put it into the other language.
Oh.
Which is kind of creepy, actually. And so apparently it puts like a head on the screen that looks like you.
So it's kind of expanding on what Dragon does.
Yes, except for it doesn't use a computer-generated voice. It uses your voice generating an imprint of your voice.
Huh.
Instead of like Samantha.
Ew.
It uses you. It tries to create you. You know, I mean, Samantha and all the nuanced voices are based on people. So they actually had people come in and make, you know, create the samples, and it has their accent in there. Well, this does it for you personally.
Ew.
Instead of, you know, having one of them.
Yeah, because it's kind of like Roger Ebert, who does the movie reviews and things and was on television for a long time. I think he had or has throat cancer, and it kind of killed his voice, and he can't really do any public speaking.
Wow.
But there is a piece of software that he uses that takes a whole bunch of samples from his voice and actually gives him his speaking voice.
Yeah, that's what this does, except it puts it in another language.
Yeah.
It doesn't take your voice and say English. If you say English to the computer, it doesn't say it English. It says, I don't know, French or whatever.
It's going to do better than me going parlez-vous Francie.
Yes, yes. And I thought that was excellent.
Yeah.
What,
my impersonation or the software?
No, the Windows software. Oh. I do think the fact that it puts a head up on the screen that has your picture is a little bit freaky.
I believe we call that Max Headroom.
Whatever. Ew.
Back from the 80s.
Yeah. There is an app called Portable Sign Language Translator that's going to come out in 2013. And it is, I think, going to be for iOS, Android, computer, anything that you have that has a camera. So what essentially, and it's for British Sign Language, and people in the U.S. may be developing it for American Sign Language, I don't know. But what happens is that people sign in front of the camera, and it translates this into text that is printed on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So they want this app to be on all platforms possible. So I don't know. I mean, computer, PC, Windows, Mac, iOS, Android,
pretty
that
much
kind of
anything.
Pretty much anything. So the idea is it's going to be out in 2013. No information on how much it will cost or anything like that, or if anyone in other parts of the world is developing apps similar to this for their own versions of sign language.
Well, that would be a good thing, because you can occasionally run across people that have a hearing impairment and they do sign language, and
absolutely,
you can't figure out exactly what they're doing if you haven't studied that before.
Absolutely. And I have had run into situations where I needed to talk with someone who only spoke in sign language. And so I had to be connected with an interpreter over the phone who could, you know, look at what these people were saying and say it back to me, like on the phone.
Yeah.
The cool thing about this would be if the person had like a little webcam and, you know, you each had your app on the computer somehow, and it could put on my screen the text of whatever the people were saying. Hmm. So hopefully that's what this app can do. It probably won't eliminate the human touch completely. I'm sure it has a long way to go, especially if only a prototype is going to be released in 2013. But I think it's got great potential and possibility. And not only can assist with translating, but also learning if you want to learn sign language yourself. Okay, speaking of things happening in London or England or wherever, because that has British Sign Language written all over it, the accessibility seminar at the London Book Fair is going to happen soon, and they are going to be discussing digital book formats, primarily EPUB, and talking about ways in which people with assistive devices read EPUB books, as well as discussing the standards in which EPUB formats are made accessible. So that will be happening soon. We've got information in the show notes about how to get involved in that and who the speakers are going to be, etc. Additionally, the 6th European e-accessibility forum is going to take place in Paris soon. There's still time to register. And they're going to be talking about basically how accessibility is woven into mainstream technology and software. BrailleNet is sponsoring this, among other organizations. I don't really know exactly what's going to be happening, but it seems like they're going to talk about not only assistive technology and how it's accessible, but how accessibility can be integrated into other software like web browsers and software programs.
And so, according to Blind Bargains, I believe it is March 26th.
Yes, March 26th for that. And we have a post from the DAISY Consortium that talks about that. HIMSS Inc. has released the BookSense Master. I'm surprised that BookSense doesn't have something similar, since all the other digital book readers have some kind of assistive device. Like the Victor Reader Stream has the HumanWare Companion, and PlexTalk has the PlexTalk Transfer software. Yay, what a name. Original. I'm surprised that the BookSense doesn't have this same thing already, but essentially what the BookSense Master does, and it works with all flavors of the BookSense, BookSense ST, etc., is to help you transfer files from the BookSense from your computer to the BookSense and vice versa. And it makes sure that all the files go in the folders that they're intended to go into on your SD card so that it can be read appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use this kind of thing. I find the PlexTalk transfer software sort of kludgy, and I find the HumanWare Companion slow. So it's very rare that I use either one of those, but I, you know, am geeky enough to know how to put them onto the SD card, you know, by hand.
You figure out the structure, you're okay.
You're okay. But I did use both of them initially when I was learning the devices so that I could get comfortable with them, and also so I could figure out the folder structure. But once I had that, I didn't end up using them as much.
Hmm.
One last sort of sciencey bit of news is that spinal cord problems are really on the rise in China because of the economy. Construction is also increasing. Accidents are also increasing, and spinal cord injury is increasing. For this reason, Research into the curing of spinal cord injury is on the rise in China. And also, the Chinese government has a very good clinical standard, apparently, in terms of getting things through research and experimentation quickly and efficiently. So the prediction is that China will soon be at the head of the game in terms of curing spinal cord injuries and providing research on that topic.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. So, you know, just a sciencey bit of information to throw out there.
Well, that's something good for everybody to know that that's Absolutely. Out there, because car accidents happen, different things like that. Mm-hmm. So everybody can be impacted.
Yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate thing that's making China, you know, forcing them to go ahead is, you know, they're having a lot more accidents on the rise in China. But that's a motivation to get this kind of thing to go through, and kind of sad that it has to be that way. But sometimes you have to have something bad happen in order to get something good to happen.
Unfortunately. What were you thinking? All righty. In Austin, Texas this past weekend, and continuing on this week, is South by Southwest, which a lot of people say is pretty much a week-long party. Well, BBH Labs, a marketing firm, has made a partnership with Front Steps, an Austin, Texas homeless shelter.
Oh, God, this is horrible.
It's getting mixed reviews. Anyway, this is a partnership that will allow homeless folk to carry Verizon MiFis around, which are like your wireless hotspots that can have up to 5 connections. They walk around Austin, Texas wearing t-shirts that say things like, "Hi, I'm Stan, and I'm a wireless hotspot."
Sure he's not a book order?
Could be.
Anyway, yeah.
Check that out at bhapodcast.com.
Yeah, they advertise themselves as wireless hotspots. Use me as a hotspot for a payment of $2, I think it is.
Yeah, they aren't really charging anything specifically for it, but the estimate is maybe if you want to use wireless internet for 15 minutes, you would do $2 or $5 for 30 minutes or something like that. It's all voluntary donations. You try and log on to the service. It'll ask you for information to pay via PayPal. Everybody at South by Southwest has mixed reviews because this is kind of exploiting the homeless folks and trying to bring awareness to homeless, but then at the same time, how shallow are people that they need to be on Wi-Fi?
Oh my gosh, that's what really bugs me about the whole situation. How shallow are you that you have to be on Wi-Fi every second, especially when you're walking around in the streets and, you know, that kind of thing, and doing other errands? That
but just... it's an easy way to give people donations.
Very,
you know,
true.
It goes to the actual homeless person that is walking around the street.
That's
part of
true.
It goes to them, and part of it, I believe, goes to the homeless shelter. So, I mean,
it
does good.
It raises awareness of homelessness, and it's not like the shelter is forcing these people to do it. I mean, they're doing it voluntarily.
Yeah.
They're not being coerced into doing it.
And one of the people they were talking to, he said that he was more than willing to do it to earn a little money because he was down on his luck. He lost everything that he owned during Hurricane Katrina back in 2005 and just has, with the economy, hasn't been able to get his feet back under him. You know, so he's like, anything he can do to help himself and the community, hey.
I have to say, it's an innovative idea. I'll give it that.
Yeah, I think just the fact that they're doing it and how they're doing it is the problem that everyone has.
Yeah.
But I did hear on one report that when you actually log on to the service, you actually get a bio of the person.
Oh, that's
good. So you kind of get, here's the guy you're talking to and here's his life story.
Now, that's a good thing. So they're actually people and you don't see them as just moving internet connections.
Yeah, you actually get the human interest story to go along with it.
Another human interest story, or is it just a human interesting story? Mm. Some dude decided that he was going to put a camera under his wife's bed to
catch... Or an audio transmitter, one of the two.
One of the two. I don't know whether it was a camera or just audio transmission. Under his wife's bed to catch her having sex. Now, the key is under his wife's bed. So apparently they didn't just have separate sleeping arrangements. They actually were having marital troubles, and she actually had a boyfriend. that she would invite over on occasion.
And they were living in the same house still.
Yeah, still. So he decided he's going to catch them having sex. So he put something under the bed, and he's caught at it. And apparently these people are not young teenagers, although they're acting like teenagers. They're like in their 60s or something. Oh God, I just said like. And so he's being charged with invasion of privacy, of course. And this is just so stupid. I can't even believe it.
Yeah. If he knows she has a boyfriend, I... Mm.
And why is he even jealous? They're separate. Even though they live in the same house, they seem to both have agreed that they don't want to be together.
Maybe it's the old thing of, has she really moved on?
Yeah.
You know, he's not able to deal with it because he hasn't moved on.
I think that's probably it. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, like what's going to happen with that.
I saw that on last week's Desperate Housewives.
Hopefully they get divorced.
Really? Yeah, you would think that if they wanted to separate, they'd get different living arrangements.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I mean, I have heard of people living in the same house if their children are still around, but I don't think these people have any children.
No, it did not appear to be, but kind of crazy.
Nutty.
Kind of fits in there with, there was a health app that would actually monitor every activity that you did.
Oh, right.
And it would apparently put that out on tweets or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe mm-hmm. he was using something like this.
Maybe.
Or that.
Although I think it was just for his personal knowledge. Like, it was just a thing that went to him. But still.
Kind of creepy, dude.
Ew. This creepy madness that you've been listening to is Tech Access Weekly, episode
131.
To get information about the stories we covered during this episode, you can visit delicious.com/techaccess/131.
If you would like to check out the Book Hoarders Anonymous podcast, head over to bhapodcast.com or follow Book Hoarders on Twitter.
And you can also check out the Melting Pot Show on Mushroom FM on Sundays from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern by going to mushroomfm.com/meltingpot.
You had your two consecutive things. Why couldn't I have my two consecutive things? You just can't let me have anything.
No, I can't. Mm. Nope.
It's a good thing this is the only time we can converse
communicate
during the week.
Yeah, that's what we tell everybody. Other than Twitter. The only time we communicate other than Twitter. With all that said,
I guess we will sign off until next week. Hopefully you can digest all of these stories.
And right now we will simply say,
if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it's Rodney Edgar.
And I'm Aaron Edgar.
Bye!
Bye!